the Homer Hour. It's just a half hour tonight, and this will be the best Homer Hour half hour ever, because for 30 minutes, other than the other stuff, going to talk with Jim Jones, one of Marquette's all-time greats, who had his jersey retired earlier this week. The Jones number 22 is high above the rafters. And first of all, good evening. Now, are you Jim? I look on Wikipedia and they say Bunny. I got to ask about that.
Let me tell you about Bunny. My father had his hands outstretched. They stood me up. I caught my balance and he told me to walk, and I tried to walk. And instead of walking Homer, I bounced like a bunny. And they fell out laughing. They said, look at him, bouncing like a bunny rabbit. So they gave me the nickname Bunny.
Did anybody in your life outside of your family call you or know you that your name was Bunny?
Well, yeah, my brothers and sisters, my mother would call me Bunny. My auntie would call me Bunny. You know, so a lot of my people call me Bunny.
All right, Jim Jones. I don't know where to start. I said I think I know more about you than you do. So I do games with Jim McElvain. And all he could ever say was, Racine St. Katz, there was nobody who was the best ever because nobody, even I, was never in the league of how good Jim Jones was. Were you that good in high school?
Well, I was the tallest, put it like that. I was 6'11". I had played against for three summers. From the time I was in ninth grade to the time I was a senior in high school, I would go to Chicago and play at the Chicago Boys Club against Bob Love and Bob Boozer, sure, and all those guys, Borwinkle, you know, as a ninth and tenth grader. And then I'd go up to Laverne Way off third, and I'd play against Freddie Brown, Johnny Johnson, and all of those great players. What's the little guard that was the leading scorer in the country from the small school?
John Rinka.
Rinka. I played against Rinka, and he'd shoot everybody out. George Thompson would almost be fighting everybody. So from the time I got out of high school, I played against great players. And one thing, my high school coach had wanted me to go to Stevens Point because at the time, remember Coach Bennett? That's where he started.
Wow. Well, let's get back to Rinka. By the way, you know, Shaka Smart went to the same school as John Rinka. And when I heard,
no way.
Yes, when I Kenyon, I went there and I said, I know you're not the greatest scorer.
Oh, we know that.
Because they told stories about Rinka, who was from Shorewood. He was so good. He said, I got to go play the best players, black, white, I don't care what color. And
right.
I don't know if that's true or not. That was just.
It is true. I played with him and against him. And I seen him eat up Clarence Sherrod, Freddie Brown, and all those guys in one afternoon and just shooting. If they had a three-point line, he would have made 7 out of 10. Plus, he was strong. You know, he was built like a football player.
All I know is stories that I heard. So
yeah,
let's
John,
go back to you're in what grade when you played against pros or when you go to
Well, let me tell you what happened. I was a junior in high school, and they sent me to Ed McCauley's basketball camp, which was in Wisconsin.
Okay.
Easy Ed McCauley. So I went to his camp. He made me a counselor, right? So the first guy to come in was the leading scorer in the Big Ten from Purdue named Terry Dissinger.
Sure.
And all the kids kept saying, we want you to play Jones. And I'm dunking and everything, you know, so I became the class hero. So I played Terry Dissinger to 10 and beat him, right? And then 2 days later, they brought Oscar Robertson.
Yeah, yeah.
So the big O comes in. He's shooting a shot. I'm watching his form, and I'm watching. So, you
and you're how old again? How old are you again?
I'm about 16, maybe
right.
16,
okay.
17. And I said, I could block that. And then the kids are saying, play Jones. He just beat the leading scorer in the Big Ten a week ago, 3 or 4 days ago. So I go out there against Oscar, and Oscar's feeling me out. All of a sudden, he bumps me, and he takes two dribbles, and I block the shot. And the kids are going crazy. And that was the worst thing I could have done. Because the next three shots he made in a row, I tried to block him, and his elbow went in my teeth and my lips.
And please, talk with Jim Jones, please emphasize to everyone how much of the truth that is. That you're not exaggerating.
Oh, no, I wouldn't lie about that.
No, but I mean, Oscar Robertson is legendary, but you're not the first one to tell me. Those guys, they were tough. And when somebody challenged them, whatever the age, they responded. Am I right?
Yeah, and he did. I got a bloody nose, I got a busted lip, and my teeth were bleeding.
Did he give you a look as well?
No,
or not?
Those big eyes just looked. And if I blocked, he just nodded his head. He threw the ball back to me, and I gave it to him. And the next one up, he busted my lip. He made the shot, busted my lip. The next one up, he cracked my teeth. And then the third one, he hit me in the nose and made the shot.
I can't speak for you, but I'm that age. And experiencing that, I think at that moment, I can play basketball and make money and play for the rest of my life. What thoughts did you have at that age with just those experiences? And you can add the others that occurred clearly soon after.
Well, my high school coach was pushing me toward Bennett, right? Because he knew Bennett.
Right.
John Gardner. And I didn't want to go there. And I said, Coach, you know what? I've been playing against Division I players at the big schools, and I'm playing pretty well. Well, you need to go to Stevens Point. So a friend of mine in my neighborhood who taught me how to play, a guy named Wally Booker. Wally Booker coaches girls down in Racine. I think he's at Case. And he's been doing that for 35 years, right? He coached Karan Butler in AAU. He coached Jameel Guare's son and the assistant coach at Wisconsin, Chambliss.
Uh-huh.
He coached
him.
Sheree. He just kept saying, he said, man, you can play on that level. He said, go over to St. Catharines. He said, they've had guys that played pro. I said, oh, they did? So I walked over there one day, sat, the coach started talking, said, look, I started at Park High School. I don't want to cause any bad feelings. You know, if you want to come here, fine. If you don't, no hard feelings. So I walked back home, told my dad I wanted to go to another school, and he said, do it. And so the next day, I think it was about March 15th, Jim Jones walked from it was off 12th Street. Park was on 12th Street, and so was St. Catharines, but they were like 3 miles apart. And I walked over to St. Catharines and enrolled. And you talk about a guy that lost friends, well, supposedly friends.
And, it doesn't sound like it was a tough decision for you.
No, it wasn't, because I saw where his guys had gone. They had gone mid-major. They had gone to major schools. They were just a great bunch of guys, you know. And so I wanted to go there. And so I never will forget Wally Booker said, now, he's a real coach. So he taught me everything. You know, John McGuire was a student of the game. He was the first guy to run the Bucks basketball camps. The Bucks trusted him. He ran all their camps, organized them and everything. At that time, he was the number one high school coach in Wisconsin. And he never swore. He used to call me a ding-a-ling. And just like I said yesterday, he called me a ding-a-ling.
I know,
so
and you said that, and I wanted to say, wait a minute, Jim, why? What did you do that made him call you a ding-a-ling, or did he call everyone a ding-a-ling? Because the one thing everybody says about you, not how you block shots, not how smart you were as a basketball player.
Well, I got a lot of it from him. After 5 or 6 ding-a-lings per practice, making the wrong move.
All right.
No. And the thing about it, he always explained everything. He said, look, when they double-team you, if you can still get the shot off, take the shot. But if you can't, if two guys are on you, Jim, that means someone's open. You have to pivot. You show them the inside pivot, reverse pivot. I said, oh, I've been doing those. Yeah, we'll use them so that you can have vision. And then find the open man. You find the open man, I've got enough kids out here that can make shots. We had Dave Heide, 5'8", could shoot almost at half court, a two-handed set shot. I had a guy named Paul Mattson who ended up going to Xavier. And I'm telling you, he can make jump shots like layups. And then we had the big guy, Steve Seitz, you know, 6'7", 250 pounds. And if you frowned, he'd poke you in the mouth with an elbow. So we had everything we needed And all I had to do was make the right decisions. And after I learned how to do that, the game became so much easier. But a lot of that credit would have to go to John McGuire, my high school coach.
Now, I can say I'm not surprised. After all you accomplished at all these levels, you remember those players and those times like yesterday. Because you weren't Jim Jones yet, right?
No, I'm still Bunny. I was still Bunny.
All right, now, since this is in honor of how Marquette has honored you, when and how did Marquette, do you remember the first time a coach or someone showed up or someone called you or talked to your dad and Marquette became?
Let me tell you what happened. I'll tell you exactly what happened. Marquette had invited me to a banquet, a sports banquet that they have at the end of every season. But it was an open period, and I was going to visit Minnesota with Bill Fitch, right?
Yeah.
So I go to the Marquette banquet, and guess who the guest speaker is? Bill Fitch. And so I listened to all of that. George Thompson got up, and he spoke, and he was so eloquent. You know, that's one thing George could do.
Yes.
George could talk. He could speak. And then I was listening to him, and then Bill Fitch gets up, and he's the keynote speaker. And after his speech, he said, listen, if you don't go to Minnesota where I'm at, then you've got to go to Marquette. And everybody started laughing and everything. So in one sit-down, I met my college coach and I also met my pro coach because Bill ended up coaching the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Wow.
And and he coached me for almost four or five years.
Now, what year were you? Were you was this after your junior year, sophomore?
Yeah, okay. After my junior year.
All right.
Then the next time came when Herb Cole – and Senator Cole and Al came down to Racine, came over to our house, sat down in front of my dad. My mom was ironing to keep her nerves down in the dining room, watching everything. My dad was holding his nuts and smoking a Marlboro, sitting in a broken down chair that was being held up by a cinder block. And Al sitting over there, the tile floor, you know how if you tear tile, It'll almost look like the edge of the map. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So the tile tore it up, and we had left it torn so long that the wood underneath had splintered. So it was kind of dangerous to walk around the house barefooted. You might get a big splinter in your foot. But anyway, Al's looking around at everything. He and my dad are talking. They're almost whispering. They're talking. And then all of a sudden, Al says, Jimmy, call my dad Jimmy. He said, Jimmy, if he does what I tell him, he'll be a pro. And my dad nodded. And after my dad left, my dad said, you got to go there. I said, okay. And that's how it happened.
Because Al said you could be a pro, or what do you think influenced your dad that strongly? Was it that?
Well, we were beyond poor. We were so poor that they take the P out of it. And so we were ore. We had nothing but the love of each other and the respect of my parents, my mother and my father. We used to borrow from people who were poorer than us. I'd run errands in the summer. I'd work out at Piper's Farm, pick onion sets, pick potatoes. I'd pick anything just so I could bring money home. In the winter, I'd go along the lake where the rich folks live, and I'd shovel snow from morning to I'd get up at 5 o'clock before school, hit three or four houses, make $10-$15, take it back home. On weekends, all I did was shovel snow, trying to make some money so that my family and my mother and them could eat.
Now, but I want to ask you, because in today's world, there's a feeling that there's such a pressure on kids because the family realizes this changes us forever. Am I wrong? I don't sense that that's what you felt, or that you felt any pressure, feeling that you could change not just your life but your family's life. What was it like then versus how you have observed just watching kids today?
My father came home one night after a game I had played, and he had sat in the stands and watched me play. And he came up to my room about 2 a.m, and he had Johnny Walker Red on his breath, and he looked over at me, and he woke me up. He said, Jim, wake up. So I woke up. He said, listen, you have to be something, or the rest won't be nothing. And that was the mandate my father gave me that pushed me to want to be the best basketball player I could be so that I could make money. I use sports as a vehicle. I said, if the worst thing happens, I'll have a great education. I'll be able to get a job, take care of mama, and take care of my brothers and sisters. But that night, when my father looked over at me with those bloody red eyes and that Johnny Walker red coming out of his nose and his mouth, and he said, Jim, you got to be something or the rest of them won't be nothing. And he told me what my mission was.
How old were you then when he said that to you?
I had to be about 16.
Okay. 16. So when, yeah. And we'll get to it, Marquette, you're there a year and you just never lost. Your record is not possible. When people hear your record, I think he had to go to UCLA. No one had that kind of a record. But anyway, yeah. Was that when the ABA arrived, and you can explain this whole thing, was that in your mind that made it that easy to do what you had to do? The only version I heard was Al McGuire said that $1.5 million better be in the bank. You do whatever you want, but if it's not in the bank, don't take that contract with the ABA. You take it from there.
When Al, after the game, we had just beaten Jacksonville on national television, and they had a great center.
Artis Gilmore.
No, they had David Brent.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. B-R-E-N-T, and he came after him.
Yes.
And Shady was still playing, and all those guys. I think Shady was Eau Claire, but they had a great Rex something. Rex, I can't think of Rex's name, but he was a great player, about 6'4", white kid.
Yeah, he was a guard.
He was really good.
Yes.
And we beat them on national television. So we're sitting in the locker room, laughing and joking and showering. And Al walks up to me and said, "Go see Gene." I said, "For what?" Listen to what I said. "Go see Gene." I said, "Coach, it's 9:30. Take your shower, take the bus, go downtown, and go up to Gene Smith's office." So I did. He told me where it was. There was a security guy at the gate, at the front door. He let me in, took me up a back elevator to Gene Smith's office. Gene was there, lights on, papers all over the place. You know, he's a heavy smoker. So he was smoking cigarettes. He said, "Look, I just want to let you know. A professional basketball team wants you to play for them." I said, "What did you say?" I mean, I'm just getting over my shyness, you know, and I'm just starting to talk and try to gain a little confidence, and my game was getting better. And he said, "No, they want you." I said, "Well, why don't they wait till after the season? Because, you know, Gene, we're the number one team in the country right now." He said, "No." He said, "They lost Bob Lanier a year or two ago when he promised the same thing and then ends up going to Detroit. So if you want the money, the owner," they got him on the phone, Roy Bowe, strictly New Yorker, "hey, if you want the money, you can have it, but I'm not waiting till the end of the year because I've been screwed like that before." And I looked at Gene. I said, "Can I call you right back?" He said, "Sure." I called Al. And I told
him. Now,
wait
a minute. Let me interject. You had never heard or had no idea that this existed. This was the first.
No. Yeah, I had no idea. I didn't even know people were watching me. You know, I know I was being raided, but I didn't know where. You know? And so I talked to Al. He said, "Did Gene tell you?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "What are your thoughts?" I said, "I like college." He said, "Ah, hell, you can't stay in college. Hey, you got a mother making salads at an Italian restaurant, and you call that make a living? Your father just died? Hey, look, you got to go. I wouldn't feel good if you broke a leg or something and blew this great opportunity. You got to go. Take the money, Jimmy." And so I hung up the phone, and he said, "What did Al say?" He told me to go. Wow. And even though we were 49-1 at the time.
Well, wait a minute. I think you had to believe that you could win the national championship. If I'm right, UCLA had like Curtis Rowe, Sidney Wicks, but
right.
I'm assuming you thought you were going to win the national championship. Or
I thought
play.
We were. I thought we were because, you know, I never faced with maybe a couple of man-to-mans. Everything I faced was a damn zone. So I wasn't having fun in college playing. I was getting hit here, getting hit here. Double team, triple team. It just wasn't fun. You know what I mean? And it was so difficult.
And the year before, the only game you lost was at Ohio State in the tournament, and Dean Bimminger fouled out the only time ever. And everybody I know at Marquette says
Oh, yeah. They set us up. I don't care what anybody says. If someone disputes it, let's look at the film and the files they called against Dean. Are you crazy? The guy, the most intelligent basketball player I've ever played with was him and Kareem. And you mean to tell me he's going to fall out of the most important game of our career? That's bullshit. And you should have saw the officiating. It was so bad, you couldn't touch anybody.
Wow.
But
well, hold on. You do this, and I'm going to hate to interrupt, but you just said the two smartest players you ever played with were Kareem and Dean Memminger?
Yeah.
Why? You played with a ton. You played with everybody.
Yeah, but they knew the game. They knew the game, fast or slow,
really?
Pace. Wow. They knew how to create situations that they needed to have happen so that they could take advantage of it. They could play under pressure. Pressure meant nothing to them. All they were looking for was execution. You know, they were highly intelligent.
So there's no way Dean Memminger would ever foul out of a game because he knew his importance to his team to win.
Exactly, Homer. Yeah, right. It's not possible.
Yeah,
it's not possible.
All right, back to where you were. So was it a million and a half? Or you don't have to say, but that's the line we heard. It was in the bank.
It was a million and a half. It was $125,000 for five years, and then I think it was $125,000 for 5 years.
Was it all guaranteed or what?
Yeah, it was all guaranteed. $125,000 for 5 years, and I think it was $75,000 for 5 years, and then it was after that for the next 15 years. I think it was $59,900 or something like that, and then they gave me a bonus up front. $500,000 tax free, because you got to remember, Homer, and I know you remember because it was crazy. Tax rates were 30-some percent, 30-40%. Remember that?
I was not in that tax group.
but you were close because you've been still. I mean, you've been making money.
That's fine. You can't offend me. All right, now talking with Jim Jones, and we're going to break and then get to part two, but you said Gene Smith. I hate to say I want to make sure to ask because I don't know who he is.
Yeah, he was an attorney for I'm trying to think of the firm.
Okay.
I can't think of
it. Doesn't matter. But he's the guy Al wanted you to talk to get it done. Okay.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is like, I've never heard of this. Next thing you know, that same night, all right, I'm a pro. And then what? You get on a plane and play for who and how soon? It was the ABA.
Yeah, but that's what happened. Everything changed so quickly, Homer, that I lost my bearings. I lost my focus. And the reason I knew I lost my focus, because I wasn't thinking basketball. Because I was thinking about my mother and my sisters. Dad had just died. How was I going to provide for them? Who was going to take care of them? I needed a trust, revocable, irrevocable trust, someone to help me pay my bills. I mean, I knew nothing. My daddy went bankrupt a couple times before I was 15, so we knew nothing about handling money.
Wow. All right, we're going to we'll get to part two. I don't know how many parts are going to be. And this is not for everybody else. This is just for my personal enjoyment. And so part two with Jim Jones next. This is the Marquette. No, it's not the Marquette basketball. It's the Homer Hour, part two, next. Continuing the discussion with Jim Jones, you're now a pro, and now you've got to take care of your family, but now you've got money, so shouldn't you be happy? Or you sound like when you last talked, there was a worry there.
Well, I didn't know what to do with it.
Oh, okay.
Homer, I had no idea. Think about it, Homer. You're talking to a kid at the age of 11, 12, and 13 in the summertime. They dropped the welfare truck into a mall parking lot, and they would give you your welfare food in big boxes, and we didn't have any transportation, so I'd have to walk 5, 6, maybe 7 blocks through my neighborhood with kids laughing at us because we had welfare food. Now, listen to this. They had welfare food, too, you know, but they're laughing and teasing us. the humiliation of having to do that in front of other kids and people and parents was overwhelming. You know, and so you're looking at people that, had no history of saving. You know, my dad was a foundry guy, worked in the foundry, inhaling those fumes, killed him at a young age. At 43, he was dead. You know, and three guys on either side of him from Mississippi, they died too, inhaling those damn fumes.
So who helped you?
I had an uncle, I had two uncles, but they had no background in finance. You know, they had no background. So anybody that smiled in my face and told me how good I was, you know, I said, oh, these must be good people. I mean, come on, man. I'm from Racine, a sheltered life, from the point of view that I wasn't a worldly person. I didn't have the New York background of a Kareem or Kareem or Dean Memminger.
Wow.
You know?
All right, go ahead. I don't want to interrupt.
And then other poor people who were supposed to be my cousins and friends and lifelong friends of our family, they were so jealous and hateful, I couldn't deal with them.
Wow.
Come on, Homer. This is Racine now.
I have nothing to relate to. I'm listening. I don't.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm thinking you're here now. You just got this huge amount of money that.
Right.
That would give you a chance, and then.
Yeah, and I had no one. I had no one there to help me, and I was begging for help. Let me tell you, my first 2 years in the pros, me and my wife would lay in bed and cry. And the first thing she said, "Jim, can we get somebody who be honest with us and try to help us?" I said, "I know, babe. This is over my head, way over my head, man, way over my head." What do I do with this money? Do I save it? Do I put it? What is a savings account? So listen, so a friend of mine was an accountant, seemed like a pretty good guy. And I told him, he said, what do you want to do with your money? I said, I want to buy a house. I said, and I get so many checks a month and I'll have enough by the end of the year for a $100,000 home. And he said, no, you don't put up the whole $100,000. There's a thing called a mortgage. It's called a mortgage loan. I said, what is that? He said, shut the door. Me and you are going to sit here and talk for about an hour or two. And he explained to me, here I am, a second year in the pros. Now, think about this, homie.
In the ABA.
In the ABA. I'm going over guys' houses and said, damn, how much money did he have to save for a year to have pay for that house? I knew nothing about loans, mortgage loans, or nothing. Homer, I knew nothing. You hear what I'm saying? If you smiled in my face, Homer, and said, I'm going to treat you like a human being, Jones, and I'm going to teach you this, I would have fell for it, even if you were lying behind your teeth. I had no worldly understanding of human nature and people. I had to learn everything the hard way, Homer. It's like that slap in the face. It's like a slap in the face so you remember the oath.
So yeah, did that person help you?
Yeah, I had to learn the hard way.
Yeah. Wow. All right, I have a few questions left. Do you realize how great a person your daughter Karita is? I got to do games with her, Marquette women's games. I don't know how competitive you were. She used to slam the table when the team did something wrong. We're like, Karita, you okay? Yeah, I'll be okay.
Yeah. I'm very fortunate with all my kids. We laid in bed one night, my wife and I, and we made a promise that no matter what happened financially to us, that we were not going to deprive our children from the opportunities that they deserved.
So you had triplets, right? Triplet boys?
Yeah, triplet boys,
and I
had my two daughters. And I would drill them. You're a chones. You can do anything. The importance of education. Yeah, Dad, but I don't know, like this or that. No, you need to take that. You know, and then I started reading. And my wife made sure they read books all the time to increase their brain power, and they were smart. And basically, it was my wife. If my wife hadn't been there, I don't know where my kids would have been.
Because you're playing.
Yeah, because I'm never there. I'm playing. I'm a stockbroker for five or six different firms. Finally, I learned what to do with money. One night, at about 12 o'clock at night, I was working for Prue Bache. It was called Prue Bache at the time. And I was crying. And I got in my car and I was still crying. And when I got home, she said, Jim, you've been crying. I said, yeah, E. She said, what's wrong? This is what you do with money. E, if I had known, you know, the importance of investing, the importance of risk to benefit, just the basic principles of business, I wouldn't need a job right now. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, talking with Jim Jones. I feel like this was going to be about basketball, Marquette, but it's way better for you to talk about what you want to talk about, because I want to tell people your basketball career. At Marquette, 49-1. Lost only one game, and we talked about that, Ohio State. And that's fine. And you're with the Lakers, and you won a title with them in 79-80. Fine. That's not it. Do you know the most amazing thing, which should be number one at your basketball career?
Other than my basketball career?
No, of your basketball career, the greatest accomplishment by far.
Yeah, I would say the greatest accomplishment was coming to Marquette, because I've already given you the background that I knew nothing on human nature. I was just a competitive person, and I didn't want to lose, and I had promised my father that I was going to be a success because he mandated it. Marquette was the vehicle, the education and the basketball together, which gave me the opportunity to provide for my family, myself, and regain some dignity, and helped me to do all those things that I've been able to do to now, because once I found the formula for success, I drilled it in my kids.
I heard you went to Marquette because of George. Is that true?
Oh, yes. Let me tell you, a rich alumni of Marquette, I won't mention his name, had wanted Al and those guys to give me money. Yeah, I'm telling you some stuff nobody's ever heard. Wanted them to give me money. And they brought me and my dad and my mom up to Milwaukee and sat with us and told us what they were going to make Al do. And me knowing Al now, you can't make Al do anything if he doesn't want to do it. And so what happened, my dad had cancer at that time and was dying, and I didn't know it. He kept it from us, right? I used to take him to Madison 3 times a week after school so he could get the cobalt treatment, right? Because they were using cobalt back then. And so I never will forget that at that time, my dad, I didn't know he had cancer. So I jump up at the meeting. My mom is sitting there, and my dad's sitting there, and this gentleman is sitting there. And then he asks, what do you think, Jim? And I think, listen, all I want to do, and this is the truth, all I want to do is play basketball. Homer, we got to do a book. I said, all I want to do is play basketball. I said, Daddy, I never talked back to my dad. He would have killed me, but this time I did. I said, Daddy, if you just let me play, everything that he's talking about getting us, I can get us. That's what I told him. My father jumped up all red-eyed like he had been crying. Strong man, 6'4", about 220, built like a bodybuilder, upper body, poured that steel, you know, that iron in the founders. And he said, you going to sit here and embarrass me and your mama? And he walked toward me, man. I ran out that door, ran down 15 flights of stairs to the street. And I said, well, who do I need to talk to? Oh, yeah, I met this guy named George Thompson at the banquet. I run up Wisconsin Avenue, and he was in the McCormick, the Circular Towers. I said, can you tell George Thompson that Jim Jones is here? So they called up to the room, and George said, come on up. So I come on up. He's sitting there on the floor on a big mat. And I come in, and his wife is there. Well, she ends up being his wife, you know.
Karen.
His beautiful wife. And but his girlfriend at the time. What's her name? Karen?
Karen. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Saw her last week.
So I've never told anybody else this story, Hart Homer. So we're going to get some mileage out of it. But then all of a sudden, he said, what's wrong? And I told him the story that this guy's going to give me. And he looked up at me and he lit a cigarette. You know, all New Yorkers smoked. He lit a cigarette and he said, listen, you know what Marquette gave me? And I'm the best player they've ever had. Next to some white guy named Don Coaches, who was really good.
George and would say exactly that.
Yeah. Yeah, you could hear him saying it.
Yes, I can.
And then all of a sudden George says, all they promised me was an education and an opportunity after college. And I paused. And I said, that's all they're going to give you, man. He said, if they give you that, you should be happy. He said, I come from one of the toughest areas in the world, Bedford-Stuyvesant. I've seen it all. All I asked was an opportunity to get out of there, and it helped me. He said, you go back home and you tell your dad what I just told you. He said, you got any money to get home? I said, no. So he gave me $2. I walked back down to the bus, Greyhound bus station, took a late afternoon bus, came back home. My mom was still ironing again. She's the ironingest woman, ironing. And my dad was in bed because, you know, get up for the foundry at 5 in the morning, be at foundry at 6. So I said, Mom, Dad mad at you? He said, yeah, a little bit. But on the way home, Jim, he said, maybe Jim is right. Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know the time. This might not make...
Homer,
why would you turn down money? Or I don't know that world, but
I wanted to do it on my own, Homer. See, I watched enough TV to understand that doing it on your own was the best way to do it at that time, based on my narrow knowledge of human beings, events, and how things are done.
And to hear George say exactly what you thought was all you needed.
Was all I needed.
Wow.
George Thompson. Over the years, he's cussed me out, and I took it. And he's been disappointed in me, and I took it. And you know why? Because he got me at Marquette. It wasn't Al McGuire. It was George Thompson.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a
long, meetings.
That's a long time ago.
I know. And to this day, I respect him even more. Because that was the start of everything, Homer, of me changing my world, my life, my perspective on who I am or who I thought I was. The education and the sheltering of Marquette, you know, helped me to learn and to grow without losing everything, mentally, physically, and spiritually.
You owe nothing to nobody. As far as what you did at Marquette. All right, now, you didn't even get to the basketball part of it, which doesn't surprise me. The stuff
basketball is easy.
No, Homer, your greatest achievement.
Homer,
Jim Jones, Homer. When you meet Jim Jones, you look at him and say, Homer told me, this is what everybody should know. He got first place votes for the NBA MVP. First place votes.
Yeah, when I was playing with Cleveland.
Yes. 1975-76, you were ninth, tied with Tiny Archibald in MVP voting, and you got two first-place votes in all the number of players that played in the NBA or ABA. How many do you think got first-place MVP votes? Not many. Jim Jones is in that group. Now you can take it away.
Now, let me tell you another story. So me and Bill Fitch never got along, you know, because he had this thing for swearing and wanting you to take it and act like you were stupid and just take it. And I wouldn't do it. I'd swear back at him and, you know, we'd fuss because how do you think I got into that habit? Al McGuire. Al didn't mind you fussing or whatever. Hell, he held all the keys to the cars, you know what I mean? You know, so in the end, he was going to win. So I didn't know if I didn't like something, I'd tell Fitch about it. And he didn't like that. You know, he wanted me to be passive and not say anything and do what he said no matter what. So I wouldn't do it. So I'm telling you a lot of stuff, Homer. Like, you might want to help me write a book with this. So
no, I got a guy for you, Gary D'Amato. He'll write a great book for you unless you got somebody.
Okay. So then this is what happened. I played so well one year, I lead the team in scoring, 16 a game, which isn't a lot, but we were a true team. And Gene Shue told me later when I was traded to Washington that, you know, I called Bill Fitch and told him that I wanted to put you on the All-Star team. And he said, don't do it. Yes. Yeah, brother. I mean, you might not want to print that, but I'm just being honest with you. I'm giving you some undercover stuff that I've never talked about, you know, and don't do it. That was my time to be an All-Star. So they had no bigs. So they ended up putting George McGinnis on. And I think they lost about 40, 50 points, you know, something like that, because they had no big men. But that's one of the things. That's how Fish got me back, I guess, while I was talking back. But what he didn't understand me, I never played for awards. I never played to be an All-Star. I played to win the game. There was something about winning. When I watched Bill Russell on black and white TV, Homer, and he's crying because they won a championship, I said, damn, this must win. This must mean something. And I looked at how they treated him, and he was a black man, and they were giving him ultimate respect. The ultimate respect, because he was a winner. Because he was winning. There was something about winning. When you're with the L.A. Lakers and a 19-year-old who just won a championship beating Indiana State that had Larry Bird, and the next year he wins a championship in the NBA, and when Chick Hearn's interviewing, all he kept saying is, Chick, I just want to win. And then you see the great Michael Jordan. For 8 years he ruled our league. No one played harder. No one had an urgency to win greater than Michael Jordan. Then you know that this winning thing, it must be important. Is this the American way? It must be, because it looks like they only respect the winner. Who took number two? Hell, I don't know, but I know who won. There's something about me when I compete on anything, there's something in my stomach that says, Jim, you got to win. I don't know what it is, Homer. I don't know what it is. And sometimes you say, we didn't win today. What could I do better? Maybe make more passes, improve my jump shot, improve my free throw shooting, and learn how to defend these guys who are bigger and stronger than me. What's the strategy? And I learned that from Bill Russell, watching him.
By the way, Jim, greatest numbers ever in sports. Bill Russell, 13 years a player in the NBA, 11 titles.
That's right. And these kids don't even mention it, like winning's not important. They don't even mention it, Homer. They're caught up on so much bullshit and rating players by how much money they make, but none of them have won like Bill. The only other guy who's won like Bill is a distant second is Kareem. On every level, from junior high school through college through the pros, think about it.
Yep.
And they don't mention those guys. Who do they talk about? A 6'6 guy who smokes cigars and drinks wine. Michael Jordan. Who else do they talk about? Kobe Bryant, who was an obsessive. You know, he trained harder than he played. That's why he didn't last any longer. They talk about LeBron James, you know, and they talk, but they don't mention these guys, Homer. They don't mention them because of the economics. And the way they try to fool the fans. And fans are intelligent. You know, don't underestimate fans. Don't underestimate how they see you. They're smarter than you think.
A tribute to talk to Jim Jones. And my one last question. What are you most proud of?
Oh, that's easy. My wife and my kids. My wife and my kids. Nothing comes before them, Homer. And I've always been that way. From the time I signed and I said the only reason I turned pro is because of my mother, I meant that. That was the legacy my father left me with. If you don't be something, the rest won't be nothing. The family. and it was my duty. I'm so proud of my wife, devout Christian, goes to church more than Jesus. And
can you teach that to young people, or were you taught it? What's the transformation?
Homer, you have to be able to teach it. You have to be able to teach your kids how to be men and how to be women, how to accept responsibility, how to get things done. That is responsibility of the parents. Listen, Homer, we get our spirit from our mothers. 9 months inside of her. Think about that. Everything that she goes through emotionally, mentally, physically, and spiritually is in you. Our fathers can teach us many things. They can teach us how to protect them, take the bullet if somebody tries to bring it to the house, how to farm a field, how to go to work every day for 30 years and bring that check home. He can teach you that. But no one can teach you to be human more than your mother. Yes. She's special. She's special.
Let us finish on that. I speak for all of Marquette and for many, many, many years to thank you for all that you've done and all that that you will do. And of all the greatness you speak of, I'm going to start with 2 first place votes, NBA MVP. Thanks for the time. And yes, I'll have Gary D'Amato get in touch with you. I can't think of anybody better to write a book. And yes, you have a book that needs to be written.
Thank you, Homer.
My pleasure.
Peace.
Jim Jones, Jersey 22, retired by Marquette. Marquette basketball next.